Great to see all of you, and especially those of you who may be on fall break from college. I know we have some students with us. We have quite a section over here. I think half of Messiah is sitting over here, thanks to Maddie Grace, who brought them, I guess, all home for a break. But great to see you guys. All right, there you go. So that's my alma mater, so I had to speak out for that as well. But yes, thank you very much. I know how to get cheers somehow in this. We've been doing a series, and we're in a series, this is our second week, called Everyday Discipleship. What does it mean to follow Jesus every day? The decisions that we make matter. The choices that we make from the time we get up in the morning to the time we put our head on the pillow should be about, as followers of Jesus, what am I doing to follow him right now, in this moment, in the decision that I'm making? And yet many times I find myself living my life, and I would suspect that you may as well, living as if you weren't. And I don't mean you're doing bad things, I just mean we're not conscious of that. We're not conscious that every decision that comes my way is an opportunity to make a choice to follow Jesus or not to follow Jesus. And we want to talk about that again this morning. Last week we talked about how everyday disciples make a decision to follow Jesus, and we need Jesus every day. And we looked at communion, where Jesus offers himself to us to be everything that we need and more to help us in our journey and really to rescue us from our sin. What great news. But have you ever looked at someone's story on Snapchat, Instagram, whatever social media platform you look at, and you're reading through and maybe glancing, being one of those stalkers, you know, looking at other people's stuff online and looking at that, and you're like, you're looking at what's happening in their life, and you're like, man, I'd like to have that story. I'd like to be a part of that story. Sounds like they're having a lot of fun. Sounds like things are going really well in life, which, by the way, is how social media works. So pause for a second here to say, especially for our younger ones who are here, we always got to be careful that we're always looking at someone else's highlight reel when we look at social media, right? We're looking at their best moments. We're looking at their things, often their things that they're most excited about, those things that they want to put out there that are positive and good. And sometimes we can think, wow, my life's not like that. And we don't realize that behind all of that can be a whole lot of other things that aren't quite so positive, because all of our lives have the ups and downs. So social media is great, also something sometimes we got to be careful with. But, you know, that idea of wanting to be a part of a story, a significant story, a story that matters. And the beautiful thing is that as an everyday disciple, you and I are invited to join God's story every day. We are invited to join a greater story every single day. Greater than what we might come up with on our own, greater perhaps than our own goals and dreams. God has something dynamic and exciting that he wants us to be a part of. And to illustrate this, and if you're a part of our life groups and the life group experience, you'll be working through this in your journal this week. It'll highlight a little bit the story of Moses. And I'd like to build off of that and look at a man's story from the scriptures and how his story intersected with God's story. And I think we can see some things that will apply to us as well as we take a look at this. So if you have your Bibles, I encourage you to open to Exodus chapter 3. It's on page 56 in the Pew Bible. I encourage you to follow along with us, if you would, as we look at this story of a man by the name of Moses. His story actually takes up a pretty significant part of Scripture, from the book of Exodus all the way to the end of Deuteronomy. Now, I know there's some other things that go on in those books, like the law and sacrifices and things like that, but his story really incorporates a significant section of the Old Testament. It's retold by Stephen in the book of Acts, as Stephen walks through history of the Israelites. It's highlighted in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Moses is again mentioned and given significant space. And really, it's part of God's story of how he has called out the people of Abraham. He started with one man and said, I want to build from you a nation. And out of that nation, I want the world to see what it looks like to follow me. Sometimes we get confused and we have this idea that God chose the Israelites because they were better than everybody else. No, they weren't. In fact, he makes a point of, you weren't better than everybody else. That's part of why I chose you, because I want other people to see, if you follow me, this is what it can look like. They were meant to be a display to the world of what it looks like to follow God. And certainly as they were beginning that journey and they end up in Egypt because of some famine there, and the story of Joseph, if you're familiar at all with that, if not, that's okay. And so they come to the nation of Egypt, and at first it's good news, but then over time Joseph dies, the Pharaoh who was favorable to them dies, and over time they begin to multiply and they're growing, and the Egyptians begin to fear them. And when people fear other people, bad things happen. And that's exactly what took place, as the Egyptians now become their slave masters and enslave the Israelites. And this has been going on for a period of about 400 years. And they've been crying out to God saying, God, where are you? Would you rescue us? And it's now time for God to say yes. So as we look at the life of Moses, we're going to look at three periods of 40 years. Moses lived for 120 years, and his life could easily be broken up into those three periods. And so as we look at the first period, the first 40 years, we pick it up in Exodus chapter 2. We'll read a little bit more as we get along, but you can kind of follow along. I'm not going to read all the sections. Exodus 2 through 11 kind of captures this part of the story. But we see that Moses is born in a pretty, it's a tough time. It's a time when Pharaoh has made a decree saying, listen, because these people are too numerous, he tells the Hebrew midwives, he says, look, anybody who's born, if it's a boy, you have to throw him in the Nile River. Girls you can keep, boys you got to get rid of. And you imagine growing up or being in that kind of an environment, or even as a parent and you're pregnant and you're wondering, is this going to be a boy, is this going to be a girl? Imagine that kind of pressure, imagine that kind of feeling going through your mind as you're, you know, do we even have children? And they, if they did, they didn't know what was going to happen. And this mom and dad have this boy named Moses, and they decide instead of doing what Pharaoh had told them to do, instead mom comes up with a plan and puts Moses in this little basket and sets him in the reeds by the, in the Nile River. And I believe this was actually part of the plan. I don't think she just put him in the river and said, oh, well, whatever happens, happens. I think she knew where Pharaoh's daughter went to bathe, and she put the baby near that, hoping that something good would happen, and something did. Pharaoh's daughter notices, tells one of her servants to go get the basket, and says, ah, this is one of those Hebrew babies. And in that moment, she could have made a decision to drown the child. But instead, she chooses to keep it. And she actually says to what she doesn't know is Moses' sister, who's been watching, listen, could you go get somebody to take care of this baby for me? And Miriam says, yeah, I know somebody, and goes and get Moses' mom to come and take care of Moses for Pharaoh's daughter. He grows up in the palace. He is taught, imagine going to what you might consider the best university in the United States, whatever one you consider that to be, for whatever area of study you want to go to. That's what he had access to. He had the best knowledge of the day. He learned all of the arts of speaking and warfare and mathematics and everything that went with it, he learned, because he had all the privilege of being in Pharaoh's household. And as he grows up, it comes to a day where he goes out, and now he's 40 years old. So that's the first 40 years of his life, right? And he's 40, and he goes out, and he witnesses what's happening. Somehow he must have known that he was a Hebrew. He was different in some way. And he witnesses this Egyptian slave master beating on an Egyptian slave. And he decides in that moment to intervene. He had no reason that he needed to. He didn't have to do this. But he makes a choice to say, this shouldn't be, and I'm going to make a choice right here to side with the enslaved people as opposed to the people who are doing the enslaving. Even though I have all the privilege and rights of being an Egyptian, of being in Pharaoh's household, he makes a decision. He actually attacks the Egyptian, and we don't know how it went down, but he ends up killing the Egyptian, and then he hides his body in the sand. And we learn as we look at Acts chapter 7 that what he thought he was doing is he was starting a revolution. He thought, ah, they'll see, here's the leader they've been looking for. It's time to rebel against the Egyptians. This is our moment. And yet he comes back the next day and he sees two Hebrews, two Israelites, fighting against each other. And he says, guys, what are you doing? Why are you fighting against each other? The idea being, we can't fight against each other. We have to unite. We have to unite against our oppressors. And one of them steps back and looks at him and says, well, who do you think you are? Who made you judge and ruler over us? What are you going to do? You're going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? And all of a sudden, Moses realizes that what he has done is known. And in that moment where he expected to be accepted and celebrated as the new leader, instead he's rejected. Who are you? Why should we listen to you? In fact, in Acts chapter 7, Stephen records it this way. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. You ever had a moment where you stepped in, like, you know, really took a chance and you wanted to do something great, and the people you were trying to help motivate and get together look at you like, what are you doing? Who are you? You're like, okay. And you kind of slink back to your hole, right? Like, why did I even try? Well, see, now Moses knows at this point that his life is on the line because he has now showed his true colors, and as Pharaoh learns about Moses' deed, Pharaoh begins to hunt Moses down, and Moses takes off. Moses flees, and he heads to the wilderness. He's rejected. But he made an important choice that's going to actually be key in the rest of his life. And his choice was this, that he chose his purpose, because what we're going to find out is that he was actually right. He was actually right that God had raised him up to lead his people. He just had the timing and the method wrong. He didn't do it God's way. He was going to do it his way. And God said, now's not the time, and you're not ready yet. But he chooses his purpose over his position. He says, I will choose something greater than the opportunity that I have placed in front of me as one of Pharaoh's household. And there's a realization, and maybe you've had this realization, maybe you've said this out loud, maybe you've heard someone else, that whatever life you're living, as good as it is or as bad as it is, where you've said and you've looked at someone or looked at yourself in the mirror and you've said, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. There's just got to be more to life than this. And I think Moses had one of those moments. As he grew up in the palace with all the privilege that came with it and could have just rode out his life in comfort, at some moment he had to say, there's got to be more than this. There's got to be a grander story out there, and I want to be a part of it. And although at first he's going to make the wrong steps to be a part of the story, I still appreciate his heart that he wanted to get involved. You see, at some point we have to make a choice when we're going to step out and let go of something to go towards something greater. We have to give up whatever is holding us back from pursuing something greater. Because when we want to pursue something greater, it almost always means saying goodbye or letting go of something or somewhere that we are currently. In Hebrews chapter 11, it's recorded this way. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He set that aside. He chose instead to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking ahead to his reward. You see, for him to say yes to something greater, he said no to all the pleasures of Egypt, all the riches of Egypt, all the opportunity he would have as possibly successor to Pharaoh. All of that he said no to in order to step into something else. Why? Because he was looking ahead and he realized that in the grand story, there was something greater than anything his position could gain for him where he was. And he was willing to step away from that and step into something else. And so I ask you, as I've been reflecting this week, what is your, if I pursue this, then I'll have to give up this moment? What does that look like for you? Have you had one of those in your life where you've decided, you know what, I really think this is where I should go, but if I go down that road, I'm going to have to give up this, whatever this is. I really feel like I need to follow God in this way, but if I do that, that may mean I need to give up this relationship. Ooh. Not sure I'm ready to do that. Or this job. Oh, comfort. Or this location where I live. I may have to pick up and move or go somewhere else. You see, as we choose to enter into God's grander story, bigger story, it almost always will mean we have to give up, let go of something else. If I go sit with that person at the lunch table, some of you who go to our schools might say, I'll have to give up my social group. That person's sitting all by themselves. There's nobody with them. And if I get up from here and go over there to reach out to them, which I sense God's prodding in my heart to do, what's going to happen with my social group that I'm with? Are they going to now ostracize me? Am I going to lose them? Am I going to lose my friends? If I give this financial gift, I'll have to give up what? What is it? Vacation, a newer car, whatever it is that you might want. And again, not that any of those things are wrong or bad, but if God's prompting your heart to do something and join him in some way, it will almost always require letting go of something else. If I reach out to my neighbor, I'll have to give up my privacy or my personal time or doing the things I like to do. Whatever it is that you might fill in the blank with, what is the cost? If I adopt or do foster care, I'll have to give up time, resources, space, in my home, space with my own family, time with them. You see, when we accept what God is calling us to in a grander sense, almost always means we have to let something else go? What is your something greater? What is it that is out there that you're saying, that's what I really need to be going after? And maybe you are, maybe you're not. Maybe you're not because you're holding on to something instead of letting it go to go pursue it. But you sense that God is calling you to something greater than you're doing right now or you're involved in right now. And bottom line is, if I sense that God is calling me to something and I'm not doing it, I'm simply not convinced it's greater than whatever I'm holding on to. If I'm really honest, that's what it comes down to. What I'm holding on to is more important to me than whatever it is I sense God is leading me towards. I'm not yet ready to let go of comfort, security, position, financial gain, whatever it is, in order to pursue what I sense God may be calling me to do. And here's our first point in the first section of Moses' life. Everyday discipleship means we live for something greater every day. Every day we live for something greater, a grander story than just our own. That we realize we're a part of something bigger than just us. So as I make decisions during the course of my day, it's with the recognition that there is something greater going on. And how do I make decisions that plug into that something greater? And sometimes that may mean I have to let go of something that might be important to me. All right, let's look at the second 40 years. While Moses escapes to the desert, he ends up getting married. He has some kids, and he ends up becoming a shepherd, and he's watching his father-in-law's sheep. Now, just for a moment, there's nothing wrong with being a shepherd, but in that day there was. If you were in Egypt, and some of you may recall when the Israelites first moved to Egypt, and Joseph said to his family, listen, when you go before Pharaoh, say that you raise livestock. Don't say that you're shepherds, because Egyptians hate shepherds. I don't know why. I don't know what they did to them. They don't like shepherds. They look down on them. They were very much lower class. It's funny, if you read the story, so what do? They go in to say to Pharaoh, hey, we're just shepherds. And I'm sure Joseph's like, oh my goodness. I tell him one thing to do, and they don't do it. Right? So I don't know if this is part of the enmity that the Egyptians viewed the Israelites as shepherds and so had a right to take them over and felt like that was part of their right to dominate them as a people. I don't know. But the point is, he becomes a shepherd. He becomes that very individual that his people he came from despise. He's gone from the top to the very bottom. And he's out in the fields. They're not even his sheep. They're his father-in-law's sheep. And you imagine if you've ever stepped or lost opportunity or position and ended up at the bottom, it's not a very pleasant place to be. And he's not at the bottom for 1 year or 2 years or 3 years. He's at the bottom for 40 years. And I believe that it is in this time where God teaches him what he needs to become the leader of the people that God wanted him to be. You see, at the age of 40, he wasn't ready yet. But at the age of 80, he's finally ready to do it. Oh, my word. For some of us, it just takes a long time. Right? So that's what's happening. And in this period of time, there comes a day in probably one of the more well-known stories of the Bible where Moses is out with the sheep and he sees this bush in the distance and it's on fire, but he notices that even though it's on fire, it's not burning up. And so that's odd. And so he heads over to check it out. And as he gets closer, someone calls out to him, Moses, Moses. And he says, yes, Lord, your servant. And he says, yes, I'm here. He actually doesn't even know who it is at that point. And this voice tells him, look, take off your shoes because where you're standing is holy ground. And this is all new to him, but he does it. And as he gets closer, this voice calls him to something. And basically, this is a moment where God is inviting Moses to step back into the greater story. It's time for you to get back to what I wanted you to do. You're now ready, and I want to use you in a great, great way. And so he has this encounter with God. And ours may not be a burning bush. I would guess it is probably not. But I guarantee you, as followers of Jesus, we will have these encounters where God will come to us and say, I want to use you to do something. And we may not hear an audible voice. It may be an impression that we have or others that are confirming something that God's been putting in our hearts. And we have to make a decision. Am I in or am I out? Am I going to stick with my story or am I going to put my story and say, I want to make it a part of God's greater story? And guess what? Moses wasn't real thrilled about the opportunity. He wasn't like, oh, this would be great. Let's do this. In fact, there's four rounds. Actually, five. There's three questions that Moses asks. There's an excuse, and then there's just an outright refusal. I actually think this is somewhat funny when we look at it. So first, God says, look, my people are groaning. I want to send you to go lead my people out of Egypt. Okay, that's a grand story. I tried that. Didn't work. So why do you think they're going to, you know, listen to me now? So his first question is, who am I? And he responds, you can read this in Exodus chapter 3. But he basically says, I'm unqualified. I'm insufficient. I don't have what it takes to do what you're calling me to do. Why would you pick me? And I think sometimes we have that when God reveals an opportunity and our first reaction may be, whoa, that's a big opportunity. That's risky. Why are you looking at me? What makes you think I could do this? And God responds by basically saying, it doesn't matter who you are. See, you don't understand. And God's response is, I will be with you. See, Moses thinks this is all going to rest on his shoulders. And God wants to make clear from the very beginning, I'm not calling you because you're super qualified. You don't understand. I'm calling you because I'm going to go with you. I'm the one who's qualified, not you. So trust me and just come along for the ride. I have my reasons why I'm picking you. And sometimes we have to remember that when God calls us to something, we're like, I can't do that. It may be that God said, I know you can't do that. But trust me because I can. And I'm just looking for people who will yield their story to my greater story to do something amazing. So Moses' next question after, who am I? I'm unqualified. I'm insufficient. Well, then as God says, don't worry about it. I'll be with you. Well, then Moses says, well, who are you? Like, who are you that's coming with me? I think this speaks to, like, Moses maybe doubts about who this God is. He's just not fully aware. And God makes this amazing statement, I am who I am, or I will be who I will be, depending upon how you look at it. But the idea that we may say, what is that kind of a name? God reveals his name in a very special way to Moses. And really what it simply means is the one who always has been and brings others into being. You want to know who's coming with you? It's the one who's always been and the one who brings everybody and everything else into being. Is that good enough for you? Is that good enough for you? In other words, I'm the one who's fully qualified, fully capable, and fully sufficient, even when Moses knows he's not. We ask a third question. Well, what if they don't believe that it's you who sent me to them? And I think in Moses' mind, he's playing this, you know what, last time I went and presented myself as God's rescuer to my people, one of the people looked at me and said, who made you judge and ruler over us? Huh, I think that's still playing in Moses. I tried this, God. I went as your representative and God's, you know, not at his timing and in his way, and they rejected me. So what makes them going to accept me this time? Well, how am I going to convince them that it's really you that's sending me? And so God gives them these signs, these different things involving a staff and his hand turning diseased and then not diseased and water turning into blood. He gives them these signs basically saying, look, as you go and present these things, it'll show that this isn't just you, that there's a greater power behind you that's making this happen. It's to authenticate my messenger that you do these miracles. And so he gets, after all of this, God's answering every question that he has. He basically gives the excuse in Exodus chapter 4, verse 10, where he says, pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. You've got the wrong guy. Thanks for this great opportunity. I wish that you would find someone else. Now think what he's saying. What he's basically saying, because I'm okay watching sheep in a desert for 40 years. Like that's his life right now. I mean, he's got a wife and kids and a family, and I'm sure he's made a life for himself. But when God offers him this opportunity, he's basically saying, you know what? I'm out. I don't want to do this. But what I find interesting that his excuse isn't even true. In Acts chapter 7, verse 22, see how Stephen portrays Moses. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in what? Speech and action. I've never been eloquent. I can't talk. You were raised in Pharaoh's household. You were taught how to speak, and you've been powerful in speech and in action. So that's, first of all, not true. But, again, it doesn't rest on you. But I think this illustrates that Moses had lost his confidence. He'd lost his confidence, and he didn't think he could do this. And so God reaffirms that he's going to help him in this process. He's not leaving him alone, which leads to Moses' last response, which is a flat-out refusal. And we do this sometimes, right? Think about it. When someone invites you to do something and you either don't really want to do it or you don't think you can do it, what do you do first? You just try to come up with reasons why this won't work. Well, I don't have time. I'm not really skilled in that area. And as the person keeps pressing and giving you reasons why that you can work around all of those things, what happens? You eventually run out of excuses. And you're actually now forced to say what you're really thinking. And that's exactly what Moses does. Exodus 4, verse 13. After all this conversation, but Moses said, "Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else." After all of this, I just don't think I'm the right guy. And really what he's saying is, God, all of your answers aren't really enough for me. In fact, I'm not so sure you're enough. Because remember, God has assured him that he will go with him. God's assured him that it will be his power that demonstrates through the signs and through all of those things. And yet Moses is still resistant. Perhaps he's scared. Perhaps he's convinced he's going to fail. We don't know all that was going on in his mind, but we do know that he tried every way he could to get out of it. Well, I think because God gets the message loud and clear that Moses is saying, "You're not enough, Lord," that angers God. And it actually says that God was angry. God gets angry and he's tired of excuses. And yet, what I find fascinating is he compromises with Moses. He gets angry at him, but he says, "Okay, listen, I'll send your brother Aaron with you. He'll speak, you tell him what to say, you be the power guy in the background, and he'll be the spokesperson, and that's how it's going to work." That's not what God first said to do. So God compromises and gives Moses his brother Aaron to go along. Now, Moses may think, "Oh, good, I finally, you know, this," and he ends up doing it, so he agrees to do it. But don't miss this. When you read through the story, it's Aaron and Miriam, which are brother and sister to Moses, who later on will rebel and say to the people, "Hey, who made Moses our leader? Didn't he speak to us too?" They actually challenge Moses' leadership and try to do a coup over the people. And yet that's who Moses has now asked to be. So sometimes when God gives us what we want, because we won't take what he first has said, it doesn't always work out as well as we might think it's going to. Just be aware of that. But God gives it to him, and Aaron ends up going. So Moses tells his father-in-law, "I'm going back to Egypt," and the story now will continue. So he made another choice. I mean, I guess he could have flat out said, "I'm not going," and not go. But he chose to go. Maybe he felt like he had no choice, I don't know. But he chose risk over security. He could have stayed in the fields or in the pastures with the sheep. It wasn't very risky. Wasn't real exciting, but it wasn't really risky. Or you can go back to a nation where the people want to kill you, even though that Pharaoh has now died, some time has passed, and try to lead a group, a large group, over 1 million, most likely, of people out of slavery. Small thing. But that's what God was inviting Moses to do, and he ends up choosing risk over security. And God calls us to trust him despite our reservations. We all have reasons why, if God knocks on our door, literally or figuratively, and says, "Hey, I want to use you in this way," to say, "Whoa, I'm not sure you got the right guy. I'm not sure you got the right woman." We all have those things in our lives. Come back in a year or two when I'm, you know, maybe more spiritual or more godly, or, you know, I've worked on this area of my life. He said, "No, I'm calling you right now. I want you to be a part of what I want to do." Trust God despite your reservations. There will be a time where God will call you to choose risk over security. Will we make the choice? It was a long time ago, that's all I'll say, but I was a sophomore in college, and I'd been working with the youth staff here at Davisville. I came through the youth ministry here, was greatly impacted by it, became a part of the youth staff when I was in college, at least while I was home, interned 2 summers here with the youth ministry. But it was my sophomore summer, after my junior year, and Charlie Robinson, who was the youth pastor at the time, had been assigned to also oversee young adults here at Davisville. And his hands were full with the youth ministry. And so he approached me and he said, "Tim, would you be willing to step off of youth staff and head into this area of young adults. I'm really not able to give the time that it needs. I think you could do this. You're in college. Would you be willing to do it? And I remember that was a really hard thing for me because I was really comfortable with youth as a youth staff person. I really liked the kids. I was enjoying the ministry that God was giving to me. And yet I sensed that God was giving this other opportunity I didn't really know much about. I was kind of building it sort of from scratch. You didn't really know what to do. And I made the decision to step out of one. And I remember how hard that was for me, and to step into another. And God blessed that ministry. And a young adult ministry here at Davisville began to thrive. And it wasn't just because of me. I think it was because I said yes, and God said, I already wanted to do this. I was just looking for somebody to be a part of it with me. That's what we always should remember. It's not about patting ourselves on the back. When we say yes, it's like God says, good, I'm going to do it. I just wanted somebody to come and do it with me. I want somebody to be a part of the story. And I got to be that and see this ministry. And out of that, God led me to my wife. That's not lost on me. Now, God can do that any way he wants. But he chose to use a decision where he presented an opportunity in front of me and didn't just lead me into a place of blessing for ministry, but also blessing personally with the woman that I've had the privilege of being married to for 26 years. God knows what he's doing if we are just willing to say yes when he calls us into those things. Now, I want to share something that's really profound with you, really deep. And those of you who know me know when I say this, it usually means the opposite. But here's the pearl of wisdom. Ponder this. To go somewhere, you have to leave somewhere. Did you get that? I mean, that's really deep. To go somewhere, you have to leave somewhere. But think about it. When God calls us to go somewhere, we often want to act like we can go somewhere and not leave somewhere all at the same time. We forget that, yes, when God says go, it means leaving where we are to some degree, whatever that may be. It doesn't necessarily mean a physical location. It may mean leaving or letting go of something in order to say yes to what God has for us. To get where God is calling you probably requires you to leave something, something comfortable, something familiar. Everyday discipleship means that we trust God enough to go where he calls us every day. It really is a trust issue. Why was Moses saying no? It was because he believed he was inadequate, and he didn't believe that God was adequate enough. You see, we often say no because we only look at our own inadequacies. But don't you think God knows them? Don't you think God knows how inadequate we are? And if he's calling you, it means that he's going to meet your inadequacy with his greatness so that what? He will get the credit, which is what he deserves. It's what he deserves. Because as followers of Jesus, we are to follow him every day in trusting him to go where he calls us and watch what he does so that he receives honor and glory. Third 40 years, last part of the story. So this is where it gets really exciting. He goes back to Egypt, and after a whole bunch of stuff, plagues, all kinds of things, they come out. He leads this group of people, over 1 million, out of Egypt. More miracles happen, the crossing of the sea and the whole Egyptian army being destroyed. They eventually come to this place called Mount Sinai. And at this mountain, God says, this is where we're going to enter into this covenant, where you're going to become officially my people, and I'm going to become your God. This is how this is going to work. And to follow me, this is what it's going to look like. And remember, why am I asking you to do this? Because I want to see the entire world understand what it means to follow a God, the one God, who is holy and perfect and pure. And so they come to this mountain, and Moses goes up on the mountain, and God's going to give him what we know as the Ten Commandments, the tablets, the two stone tablets, where God literally has written on them the law that Moses wants the people to have. Well, while Moses is up on the mountain, the people are down at the bottom, and he's gone too long. These people who have seen God do miracles, who have seen God destroy the Egyptian army, who have seen God already provide for them in the wilderness in some amazing ways with water and food to eat and all those things, these same people come to Aaron and say, look, Moses went up on the mountain. We don't know what happened to him. We need somebody else to follow. You make something for us. And so he tells them, brilliant idea. Bring me all the gold that you got. He throws it into the fire, at least that's what he'll tell Moses later, and forms this golden calf. which would have been similar to some of the gods and idols that they would have known in that in their day from Egypt and different places. And they begin to worship this golden calf. And they begin to do a whole lot of things that they shouldn't be doing. Well, Moses is on the mountain and God says to him, look, you got to get down there because it's not good. And they start to approach and Moses' aide says, hey, it sounds like a war, a fight's going on. He said, no, that's not a war. That's people having too much fun. And so they get down and Moses sees what's happening and confronts Aaron. What are you doing? Aaron says, hey, I just threw this gold in the fire and a calf popped out. What am I supposed to do? I mean, really? That's the best you could come up with? And so that's what Moses is so angry, he throws these tablets. Now, just stop for a minute. God just gave you something that he wrote on. And he throws them down and breaks them. This is not like, hey, did anybody get a copy before we did this? Right? This is it. And he's so angry. And we see in Moses' life, he's got an anger issue. There's definitely a flaw there of anger that gets expressed. It's actually going to keep him out of the promised land. But he breaks these things. And in Exodus 32, so God follows up with him and says this. You can see it on the screen. I have seen these people, the Lord said to Moses, and they are a stiff-necked people. That'll be a term that's used a lot about them. Now leave me alone so that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them. So Moses stepped to the side. Just leave me be because I want to, nah. I mean, God, it's the idea of almost like this God that's out of control. Like he's lost it emotionally. He's just going to wipe them all out. But look what he says next. Then I will make you into a great nation. Wow. Now, Moses has already gotten a taste of what these people can be like. This is not an easy job. And they just showed that he's gone for what, a couple weeks and they can't hold it together? I got to tell you, part of me would be tempted to say, hey, God, do your people, that's what you want to do. I'll just step over here. And when you're done, you and me, we'll do this together, right? That's what we might be tempted to do. But I think God has worked so much in Moses' heart that he makes a different decision. And the next three or four verses, it has recorded how Moses goes to God and he pleads on behalf of the people saying, God, you can't do this. You can't do this because you in front of the Israelites pulled all these people out. And now if you wipe them out, the Egyptians are going to be like, well, what was the point of that? Why would he save them all just to kill them himself? What kind of God is that? And he actually argues from God's character, saying, if you do this, your character is going to get smeared in the world. And actually, your whole point of these people is that you would be known as who you really are. So you can't do this, God. And he argues for their benefit. In verse 14, then the Lord relented and did not bring on his people the disaster he had threatened. Now, I know in our humanness, we see a God out of control, and Moses kind of brings them back. And we look at that and be like, what? I see it a little differently. I see it as a test for Moses. I see God knowing all the time what he was going to do, but giving Moses the opportunity to say, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. Wipe them out. Start back with me, because I've got it, and they don't. And instead, Moses does what Jesus does for us. Don't miss this. Moses intercedes on the behalf of these people that don't deserve it, but saying, God, you made some promises to them. You can't do this. And Jesus does the same thing for us. Moses and Jesus have so many parallels of another message, another time, but there's so many there that are exciting to see. And then there's more ups and downs as we bring this to a close. They come to the promised land, and the people refuse to go in. Even though God said he'd give it to them, they're like, no, we're not doing this. It's too hard. And God does the same thing. He says to Moses, how long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all the signs I performed among them? Notice, they're rejecting God. And so what does God say? I will strike them down with a plague. They escaped because of plagues. Now I'm going to bring a plague on them and destroy them. And he says it again, but I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they. Round two. It's like God saying to Moses, okay, now in light of what you've experienced since the last time I was going to destroy them, and now, and the pain in the rear end that they've been this whole time, and now they won't go in the promised land when they're supposed to go in the promised land, how about now I wipe them out? Would you like it now? And I got to tell you, there's a big part of me to be like, you know what, I interceded for them the first time, but they brought this on themselves. God, go ahead. He doesn't do it. If you continue to read the story once again, but then the Egyptians will hear about it. By your power, you brought these people out. The Egyptians will say, why would you do that? He goes through the same arguments again. If you put these people to death, leaving none alive, the nations who've heard this report about you, there it is, the nations who we're supposed to represent you to, they'll hear this and they will say, the Lord was not able to bring these people into the land he promised them on oath, so he slaughtered them in the wilderness. They will say he wasn't strong enough, so instead of showing that he wasn't strong enough to take the promised land, he killed them all right there. That's what this God did, because he's not strong enough. Moses says he can't do it. You see, in both these indications, Moses chose others rather than himself. He could have been the guy. He could have been the start of a new nation, like Abraham was. That could have been Moses, Abraham 2.0. But instead, he intercedes for these people, these difficult, complaining, disobedient, stubborn people. And God relents because he chose God's glory over his own. God, your glory is at stake. You can't do this. Yeah, it might be easier for me. It might feel better for me, but it's not good for your glory. So God, do what is good for your glory. You see, everyday discipleship means that we choose to value others over ourselves and God's glory over our preferences or even our advancement every day. Every day. And that's what Moses did. Moses wasn't perfect. He killed someone and tried to cover it up. He told God he wasn't interested and fought him about it. He broke the tablets of the law, throwing them down. He struck the rock later on, we didn't talk about this, instead of speaking to it. And because of that, he wasn't allowed to go into the promised land. He was able to see it, but he wasn't allowed to go in it. He wasn't perfect. But he was someone who, despite all of these flaws, chose to participate in God's story. And as a result, he got to experience something so much greater than if he just would have remained only in his own story. At the end of Deuteronomy chapter 34, where Moses finally dies, these words are said. Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, who did all these signs and wonders, and the Lord sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh, all his officials, his whole land. For no one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all Israel. There's never been anybody like him since, is what this is saying. When we choose to enter into God's stories, he calls us. We get an opportunity to participate in something that is so much greater. And Moses got to do that. And I would say there is nobody like Moses until Jesus. And let me close with this. In Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15, as Moses was about to exit this world, he said these words, "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you." Notice, God will raise up a prophet like me from among you, from your fellow Israelites. You must listen to him. Fast forward over 1,000 years. A long time has gone by. John the Baptist is telling people that they need to repent and prepare for the coming of one who is greater than he. And he's questioned by the religious leaders, "Who are you, John? Like, who you're a weird dude. Who are you?" And they say, "Are you the Messiah? Because we know the Messiah is to come." He says, "No, I'm not the Messiah." "Well, are you Elijah?" Because at the end of Malachi chapter 4, it says that before the Messiah will come, one like Elijah will come. And he says, "No, I'm not Elijah." Well, then they say this, "Are you the prophet?" Well, what do they mean by that? They mean the prophet that Moses was predicting. They were waiting for this guy. And they said, "Well, are you that guy?" Referring to Deuteronomy 18. And John said these words, "I baptize with water," John replied, because they were questioning his baptism. "But among you stands," here, look at that, "but among you," notice what Moses said, "from among you one will come." And John says, "From among you stands one you do not know. You don't recognize him yet. He is the one who comes after me, the straps of whose sandals I am not worthy to untie." He's the Lamb of God, who, like Moses, will lead people out of bondage and into freedom. Who, like Moses, will intercede for his people on their behalf before God. Who, like Moses, was born in a time when people were trying to kill him. Who, like Moses, did amazing miracles to confirm that he was actually sent from God to bring deliverance to the people. The parallels go on and on. between Moses and Jesus. Jesus, this complete fulfillment of what Moses prophesied. So when Jesus says things like, find out where God is working and join him. Find out where God's story is and go join that story, Jesus would say. When Jesus says, discover what it means to lose your life so that you can gain it. Instead of seeking your own position, let go of it so you can join in God's story. See what happens. When Jesus would say, learn how to serve others, putting them first and yourself last, then we should listen to him, just like Moses said we should do, all the way back in Deuteronomy. Because listening to Jesus and entering into God's story at his invitation, that's what everyday disciples do every day. Let's pray together. Father, thanks for this opportunity to look at this amazing story. May we be prompted to say yes to your invitation. May we be prompted to enter into what you're calling us to. And may we see you do things that are so far beyond us, not so that we would be seen as great or get the credit, but that we would be fully aware that this is only because you are choosing to do something magnificent. May you get the glory in our lives. Help us to value what you're calling us to greater than what we have right now or holding on to. Help us to trust you more than we trust ourselves and our own abilities. Lord, help us to seek your glory and your honor in this world greater than our own position or influence. Lord, that's what it means to be an everyday disciple. And we can't do that without you, our living hope, the one who came to intercede on our behalf and to rescue us from sin, from bondage. We thank you, Jesus, in your name. Amen.